In today's episode, we're talking all about intellectual property and how this adds value to your business. See you in a few.
Hello, I'm your host, Neil J. Lloyd, and in this podcast, we'll be exploring the latest thinking, core principles, and time-tested strategies to help you run, grow, and lead a truly successful business, one that gives you the impact and income you want on your terms. So get switched on, fired up, and ahead of the curve, as it all starts with you. From the inside out, you can create your version of business bliss. Let us help you get there faster and enjoy the adventure along the way.
So I'm here with Michelle Ward of Indelible IP, who's a trademark attorney. And in today's episode, we're going to talk all about intellectual property. Why is this important for your business? How to get it all sorted for your business and how it adds value to your business. I'm really excited. And I've known Michelle for several years now, and she handles pretty much all our intellectual property here at Zocket, which is really exciting. So I know firsthand how well she works on this and her expertise, her level of expertise. And I'm really happy that I can recommend Michelle. She's our go-to person for anything to do with intellectual property and trademarks. And so I've invited Michelle to share her wisdom on the podcast today. So we're going to dive straight in. Hello, Michelle.
Welcome. Hi, Neil.
Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Business Wisdom Show. Great to have you here today. So tell me, what is intellectual property? It's one of those words, isn't it, people band about. We hear about it, but what actually is it? And why should a business owner care about it even?
So intellectual property, or IP as it's often abbreviated to, is an umbrella term for lots of different types of rights. And what I like to encourage people to think of it as is a way of protecting creations of the mind. The reason that businesses should worry about it or care about it is, if you think about how you felt at school when someone copied your work, as a business owner, you put your life and soul into your business. Mm. If someone copies your hard work, you have to think how you would feel about that and what you would want to do. And the fact is that quite often when people do copy, it not only makes you feel upset and angry about it, but it may have a financial impact on your business because customers are going elsewhere. And if the other person does a really bad job, that reputation damage could actually impact on you because people will wrongly think it's associated with you. So it is something that business owners should all be thinking about.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I've had that in the past where someone has done something and they use a similar name to me and you think, oh gosh, you know, I even had it recently, actually. Someone came up to me and said, oh, you're that guy from blah, blah, blah. I said, no, I'm not that person. That's a different company that's got a similar name to me that we're kind of like trying to deal with. I think that's really important. And of course, if you're growing your business, we're franchising at the moment, and having that intellectual property is really important because it's part of the core value, really, isn't it, of a business?
It is. It's exactly. If you think about something like your brand, it's the thing that people recognize you by, and they associate an awful lot with that. So they'll associate reputation, quality of service, quality of product. So it's sending all sorts of messages, and the value of that can't be underestimated. Businesses often think that it's something not to think about early on in the business. It is only the big corporations. But in actual fact, as a small business, it's absolutely critical to get right because it's basically the foundation on which you're building your empire.
Absolutely. And you may want to borrow money for expansion. You may want to sell your business or, say, franchise it out. I remember speaking to our sort of franchise coach, and he was very much, you need the trademark, you need this. You know, if you haven't got all that in place, it's very difficult to attract franchisees or buyers for your business. So yeah, all really important stuff, folk. So tell me, because there's different elements to intellectual property. And I think probably the stuff that most people are familiar with or aware of at some level is copyright, trademarks, and patents. So what are the differences between those?
So they're all aiming to protect different elements of the stuff that you create. Copyright and trademark are often quite misunderstood, and lots of people assume that copyright is something that you register. Copyright will protect everything and anything, including your innovation. Copyright is one that protects, in essence, literary and artistic works and a few other bits and pieces like software code. So from a business perspective, it's going to be protecting your website content, your marketing content, your images. Trademarks, they're designed more to protect elements of brand. So traditionally, we think of things like names and logos, but it can extend to other things that you're using as part of your business brand. So it could be a strap line, it could be a hologram, shape, colours, even things like sounds and smells. So there is, trademark law tries to recognise that these days we think of brand as being so much more than just a name or a logo. And any brand specialist will tell you that your brand is not just your name and your logo, and it's so much more. So law tries to keep up with that. Patents, on the other hand, they are there primarily to protect technical innovation. A lot of it is incremental improvements on what's already out there. It's not necessarily a eureka, I've come up with a completely new widget or gizmo. It is generally an incremental improvement. And then there's something that sits in between, which is called designs, which is sort of sits between trademarks and patents. And it's product focused, but it's about what product looks like rather than how it works, which is more where patent falls. So depending on what you're looking at, it could be something that fits closer to trademarks. It could be something that fits closer to patents.
That's interesting. And so I hadn't really thought about smells. So I'm guessing, yeah, cool. I mean, candles, I guess, things like that, or is that?
It's not so much that. So there's one or two of the clothing stores that have a particular scent when you go in, and some of those they've tried to protect. There was an interesting one when this element of law first came in. Someone was applying the smell of beer to dart flights, and that apparently made their dart flights more distinctive. So there are some very unusual applications. I think it's more where you wouldn't associate a smell in the first place. So you're not going to be trademarking a perfume scent, but you're going to be trademarking the use of a scent in relation to a product or service.
So I know, I've definitely heard of companies that, you know, want to trademark a certain shade of a colour. I remember years ago thinking, well, how can they trademark a colour? But of course, they can, I think, can't they?
It's very specific. Those types of things are hard to protect.
Yeah.
But the one I always think of is the particular Pantone green that you see on BP petrol stations.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you see that in the distance, your mind will automatically tell you that that's a BP petrol station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that level of recognition of that particular colour that they've then been able to protect. So in theory, they can go after any other petrol station that uses that particular shade of green.
I guess that's the context, isn't it? It's another petrol station rather than someone in a different, sector entirely.
Exactly. With trademarks, you're always protecting it for what you do. And so it is possible for completely the same thing to be protected for completely different and unrelated sectors. Obviously, you get a few big brands who they're in so many different sectors that, you know, pretty much if you used their brand on anything, there would be an issue. But there are a lot of things out there. Polo is a great example. It's a car and it's a mint.
Yes, of course.
And you wouldn't confuse the two.
Absolutely. And you could eat a mint whilst driving, which I often do, actually. So tell us about some of those sort of typical infringements that you come across when you're, you know, in your line of work.
It's people getting a bit too close. So it's not usually someone making an exact copy of something. We see a lot of complaints about something similar on social media, people trying to sell their product under someone else's brand on Amazon or eBay. And those sorts of things are usually quite readily dealt with the IP complaints procedures that those platforms have. But sometimes it's very difficult for people to put in context how it can impact them. We get a lot of things in the press that's generally the big corporations having a go at big corporations. So think Colin versus Cuthbert a couple of years ago. We were all happily talking about chocolate caterpillar cakes, and you were either Team Colin or Team Cuthbert. And then recently in the press, there was a case of Louis Vuitton who'd gone after a little business in Norfolk who was selling garden frames, garden structures under the name LV Bespoke. And And LV is part of the Louis Vuitton branding. So they were a little upset about that. But in actual fact, the small business championed. But so those sorts of things get into the press, but a lot of it is small local business versus small local business, obviously vying for the same customers, and people sometimes just get a bit too close for comfort and confusion arises. And so that's actually where the majority of disputes come about.
I went to a recent talk that you did where you were covering some of the myths around IP, because there are a lot, aren't there?
There are.
And people think they can do or they can't do. So tell me a little bit about those. What are those common myths?
Well, there are lots of them out there. But when it comes to things like trademarks, I quite often get, I used it first, therefore I've got the rights. But who used it first is not necessarily the thing that determines who has the rights. If you've been using it a long time and it's recognised as you, then perhaps. But it's often down to who's registered first. Then people quite often think that registering a company name or registering a domain name is the thing that's actually going to give them protection for their brand. But unfortunately, neither of those things actually give them any rights in relation to their brand. It does have to be a registered trademark. And then the one that really gets me, and it's a myth I see out on Facebook quite a lot when people are discussing these things, it's like, oh, it's okay if you make X number of changes to your content, then it's okay, it's not an infringement anymore. There's absolutely no legal basis for that whatsoever. The test is it a substantial copy? So a few little tweaks here and there are unlikely to get you out of the problem. So those are just some of the myths that I hear all the time.
Hi, I'm Jake Weller from BC Media, and I'm here with Mitch from Regis. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on this.
Yeah, it's always nice to sit down with people who are a part of like different networking communities and different spaces that business owners can kind of like come to and take advantage of. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what Regis does?
Okay, so I'm Mitch. I'm the area sales manager / business development manager in Cardiff with Regis and South Wales. What we do really is Regis is an umbrella of the International Workplace Group. So it's part of the International Workplace Group. And we kind of have different solutions and kind of build platforms for companies that need a place to work from or a business address, or we offer solutions for membership options. So loads of different ways for people to work, really, and how they work, we work with them.
Okay, so it's kind of like bespoke to what people need and covers every possibility.
Yeah, definitely. So we can, you know, we can have business addresses where we take posting for clients, they can use a registered address with us, or, you know, we can have a large office for them where we can design it to their spec and everything like that, and we support them basically with their company, so we're like an extension of their business essentially.
Yeah, how has co-working changed over the last few years then? I can imagine since COVID and things like that, there's been a massive uptake and shift in how the spaces work.
So yeah, during COVID obviously we had the three lockdowns. In the first one, most people were furloughed, working from home. Since we've come back in, hybrid working's become a lot more popular now, but we've got great solutions for hybrid workers. So the flexible office solution with us is great, really, for people that are looking to work hybrid, and you know, different departments from the companies working on different days. So, you know, 3 days in the office, 2 days at home is quite good for the mental health and well-being as well, as they get to come and work and meet people as opposed to just working at home continually and not seeing anyone else, really, apart from their new puppies or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've spent a lot of time. I know when I first started the company, I still do quite a lot. It's all like bounce around coffee shops. Yeah. I'll just like spend time in coffee shops. But there's something about having like a dedicated space that's not just a public space, you know, where you can like really lock in and focus, and there is that opportunity to not be completely isolated, and you can meet people in the lobby and like, you know, people there, and it does have the office vibe, but you're still working remotely.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. But a lot of networking takes place in offices, and you know, when you're working remotely, you don't kind of get that network, and you get Teams meetings, but you know, you can't look the person in the eye in person, have a real in-depth conversation and kind of pick up on the interest and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. There's something special about talking to people actually in person. Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. How can people get in touch with you and with Regis?
So Regis, there's over 300 locations in the UK with 4,000 globally. So to get in touch with us, type in Regis Cardiff online, or it's Mitch Escott Sloan on LinkedIn as well. I've got business cards as well. So hopefully from a lot of these meetings, people will now kind of know my name. We can get to know each other.
Amazing. Well, if you're looking for a space, you know where to go.
Exactly.
So yeah,
exactly.
Thanks so much for having to sit down. Appreciate your time.
So what steps can a business owner take to identify and protect their intellectual property?
Well, probably the first thing they need to do is to look at what's actually been developed for the business to operate. So what brands have you got? What images have you got? Content? Have you got a product? In which case, has there been product design? Have you had packaging developed? Is there a piece of technology that you've had developed for the business? All of those things that actually you've had developed or have developed yourself specifically for the business, all of those have potentially got elements of intellectual property within them. So then those are the things that you need to focus on. And then look at who created them, because if you didn't create them, then and you used a third party, there might be some issues over who owns that. So those are kind of two key things to look at, and then to work through and say, which of those things would I be really upset about if someone copied? Because that's where the real focus needs to be. That's where your real value is going to be. And quite a lot of this is a moving target. So you quite often have things that to begin with you don't think are that important, but they become far more important in the business, or they're the things that customers really like, and suddenly you realize actually that's the thing that I need to make sure I've got protected. So for businesses to go through those steps and to focus on what's really important to them, then they can look at what it is that can be done to actually protect that. There's lots of information that the Intellectual Property Office have. So the Intellectual Property Office is the UK government organisation that actually administers the process in the UK. And they can be found on the government website. But the easiest thing for people to do if they don't want to have to plough through all the pages on the government website is to go to ipo.gov.uk, and it will take them to the right pages. And they've got lots of information there, giving people ideas of what sort of things that they can protect, what systems are available. So, for instance, copyright is an automatic right, so there is no registration process. But then it will explain to them that there's processes for trademarks and for patents. And obviously, if they can talk to a professional advisor like myself, see what might be right for the business, what's feasible, what fits within their budget, where to really focus that budget, because quite often those are quite small budgets and you need to be laser focused on what where you're going to spend it.
I definitely recommend doing that. I mean, I think I just took a bit of sheet of paper and I just wrote down all those things that I thought, you know, are important to me. I think I emailed them to you, I think, at that time. I said, you know, can I, these things I need to protect, or, and some of them I could, some of them I couldn't, or some of them it wasn't worth it for various reasons. Which brings me to that next question, which you've touched on just a little bit there, is how can working with someone like you, a trademark attorney, help a business? Because I know they can do it themselves to a degree, can they? You can register things like trademarks online with the IPO, I believe, is that right?
That's it.
So there is that option, but there's something, and we used to do that years ago when I first started as a startup, that's what I did. And I realised that I wasn't protecting myself fully, and it's a little bit complex actually if you don't have that expert knowledge. And this is why now I do everything through Michelle, and it's been much, much better. So tell us what's the difference working with someone like you? What does that give people over and above them doing it on themselves?
Okay, so yes, obviously it is an option for people to be able to do it themselves. The Intellectual Property Office, being a government department, they are open and accessible for business. You can fill in forms online. The balance, obviously, is that firstly, you may spend a lot of your business hours working through what it is you need to do. And it's one of those instances of you don't know what you don't know. So knowing exactly what you should and should not be putting into the form, what information is going to be best. That's where the difference comes in. Obviously, as a chartered trademark attorney, I've gone through years of specialist training. I have compulsory ongoing training to make sure that my knowledge is really up to date on what the best approach is, what the case law is telling us, how we maybe need to change approach depending on case law. And it allows us to present the best possible case to the intellectual property office for you to get something that's actually meaningful protection. What you don't want is that when you come to actually enforce that right, that you find that it's not covered what you thought it did. It's not covered what's relevant to your business. And that's really where a chartered trademark attorney can really come in. Secondly, chartered trademark attorneys, we're a regulated industry. So we're regulated by someone called the Intellectual Property Regulation Board, which means that we have to follow a professional code of conduct, which amongst other things means that just in case it goes wrong, there are actually complaint procedures that you can go through that are completely independent. So there's a really good level of consumer protection there for businesses. So the other element is that the Intellectual Property Office themselves recognise that cases which are presented through professional advisors have a significantly higher success rate than those that people do themselves. And when you think about the fact that when you pay your money to the government to try and get your right, it's not a deposit system. It's not pay and you've got it. You have to go through a process. And if you're not successful at the end, you don't get a refund of that money that you've paid. So to have some certainty that you're putting your money in a sensible place, you're spending money wisely, and you're not trying to register things that you won't be allowed to register, then, you know, sometimes that professional advice can really, really pay dividends.
Absolutely. I think, you know, you get the cover you need, the protection you need. But also, you know, I found I actually saved money because I wasn't doing things I didn't need to do.
Exactly.
Because you said to me straight away, actually, there's no point in doing that. So there you go, you've saved me, you know, £500 or £1,000 already. So absolutely, folks, I recommend really working with Michelle. So Michelle, how can people get in touch with you?
They can go onto my website, which is indelibleip.co.uk. You'll find my email and my telephone number on there. I'm also on LinkedIn. And what I would say to people is, don't be afraid to get in touch. Initial consultations are always free. Gives you an idea of what's right for your business and what any associated costs might be.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Michelle, for joining us today on the Business Wisdom Show. It was great to hear about your area of expertise and how people can really get their intellectual property sorted. And hopefully we'll see you at another episode of the Business Wisdom Show in future.
Thanks ever so much, Neil. Lovely to be here.
Well, that's a wrap. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Please hit subscribe to get notified of future episodes of the Business Wisdom Show. And please do leave a review. I'd love to hear from you. You can check out the show notes for info and links from today's episode. One of the single biggest success factors for business is networking. Done well, it speeds up your growth. Having a supportive group of peers not only helps you avoid some of the pitfalls, but also opens up your perspectives and creates real opportunities. Leading a business can be a lonely place, and it's this isolation that often stops progress. It's why most businesses fail in their first 5 years. At Zocket, we have a network of hubs that create a support structure of growth-minded business leaders, and we'd love to invite you to be part of this thriving community to skyrocket your business. Head over to zocket.co.uk where you can request a free guest pass to one of our online events, accessible from anywhere you can get on Zoom, or book a ticket to meet in person at our mixers in Cardiff and Bristol. Hey, you may even want to launch a hub in your own area. Tune in next time. This is me, your host, Neil J. Lloyd, wishing you the best in business. This podcast is brought to you by Zocket Business Hubs and BC Media. The lead producers are Neil J. Lloyd and Jake Weller.